Just want to read a verse or two from the Acts of the Apostles, please, in chapter 17. Acts chapter 17, and reading at verse 16. Now while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was stirred in him when he saw the city wholly given to idolatry. Therefore disputed he in the synagogue with the Jews and with the devout persons, and in the market daily with them that met with him. Then certain philosophers of the Epicureans and of the Stoics encountered him, and some said, "What will this babbler say?" God will bless the public reading of his word to us this evening. I've been asked to give you just a little outline for a few moments of some of the work of the gospel that is carried on, particularly in the Glasgow area of Scotland. Now let me give you just a little bit of the background so that you know where Scotland is on the map. It's on the other side of the Atlantic, and it's not a big country, 5,000 of a population, or there's more than that, 5,400,000 people. And the Glasgow area, the main city of Glasgow, has a population of 800,000. But the greater Glasgow area that embraces the whole of the urban area there is 1.1 million. So there are 1.1 million souls there. Now, Glasgow has surrounding it, and I don't know, I might use some expressions this evening that you don't understand. If you don't do what you do in a Bible reading, just look intelligent and say nothing. Because that way folk will think you're very wise. But some of the expressions I use might be strange to you. We have in Glasgow what we call housing schemes. Now housing schemes were big municipal housing areas that were built in the 1950s and in the 1960s. And these surround Glasgow. They were built to be the ideal housing accommodation. If you'd lived in the 50s and 60s, this was to be heaven, really. These were to be the garden suburbs of Glasgow. They're now the garden slums of Glasgow. Only the gardens are no longer there. But you can get plenty of mud in your shoes on the way through. And most of the folks who live in these areas, a great percentage of them are unemployed, and a great percentage of them are on social security. I think you call it welfare here. We call it social security, income support, or anything like that. And of course, there's very little gospel testimony in these areas. The assemblies are inclined to be out in the probably more salubrious areas and even in the inner city. And the result of that, these areas don't have much of a gospel testimony. Well, I want to tell you just a little of what we've done in these areas. There is a tremendous ignorance of the gospel in these areas. And that's why I read the little verse there when he saw the city wholly given to idolatry. The city of Glasgow is a city that's wholly given to idolatry. It is a city that is godless, and it's a city that is pagan, and a city that has, it now has one of the biggest mosques in Europe, a great big mosque that has been built on the banks of the River Clyde, and that in the country of John Knox, and in the country of the Reformation. And there's a big, great big mosque sitting there on the side of the banks of the River Clyde. And so, that is Glasgow, and there's a tremendous ignorance of the gospel. I can illustrate just how ignorant folk are. Maybe about 6 months ago, we were having some gospel meetings in a schoolroom in Glasgow, and there were some children's meetings before it, and a fellow came in, and I invited him into the meeting. He was bringing his children, and he said to me, didn't he want to come in because he was bevied up? I hope you know what that means in Canada. He was bevied up. We say in Scotland, he hadn't gone straight home. He'd gone into the public houses on the way through. He said, I can't come in because I'm bevied up. But he came in, and he came into the children's meeting, and he got a wee bit annoyed because he didn't win a sweetie as a prize. And he tried to put his arm round one of the girls that helps us as well, and we had to tell him that if he was a bad boy, we'd put them out. However, as the meeting went on, we decided that we would ask him to go to the gospel meeting, and he came to the gospel meeting, and I was preaching that night on a little question that we often ask. If there is a God, why is the world in such a mess? I opened up the meeting by asking that question, and he shouted out, because of the Tory government. You see. So right away we knew he didn't have a lot of spiritual insight. I hope none of you disagree with me on that, but nevertheless. He said, because, and I started preaching away, and I started preaching about Adam and the fall and all that kind of thing. You see, Romans 5, as by one man sin entered into the world and death by sin, etc., etc., all that. And he became very agitated. And he began to shout out. And that's quite a good thing, you know, that means they're listening. And he began to shout out, and I began to keep him quiet, and tell him we'd put him out and all that kind of thing. And he became more and more agitated as the time went on. And eventually my son went over and took him out. And about 3 or 4 minutes later, he came in as happy as Larry, with a big, big grin on his face, and he started doing, he started agreeing with him. That's right, that's right. Well, you tell him. You tell him. Yeah. So I knew I was getting somewhere. There was a reaction, you see. So at the end of the meeting, I said to my son, what do you do with that boy? He said, well, I just asked him what was wrong with his face. You know what the problem was. And he told me what the problem was. He says, he took me in here the night because I was babied up because he wanted somebody to blame it on. And my son said, now, why did he want somebody to blame it? He said, he's blaming it on me and I wasn't even there. See, we didn't know his name was Adam. So there was, we were able to tell him that there had been another Adam before him. So you see, there's a tremendous ignorance of the gospel. And that's the kind of thing. I'm sure a brother would agree, it's fine preaching in a gospel hall when 99.999% of the audience agree with you. So you've got to be sharp on your feet when they don't. You see? Well, we started this work maybe 4 years ago, and we started by going round. We have a little team, there's an assembly called Knightswood, and a brother here, Matt Murphy, knows about that, he's been there. And there's a brother, Alec McKenzie, there, and one or two others, and we've got a little tracking team together. The oldest was 82 and the youngest was 78, so they were in the prime of life. And we started them working. And some of you have been wondering how you work out what your spiritual gift is. Well, one brother, Bill, he came along, and he had proof of his spiritual gift because he is the proud possessor of a certificate in tea making. And it was issued in 1932. So we knew right away what job he had. He was a tea maker. And we started up by going into a big house in Steele called Drumchapel, colloquially known as the Drummy. Now, it's not a pretty place. And we went in that January. It's fine when you've got a meeting like this, you know. And I had just been commended to the work in a big meeting, and everybody is saying, on you go, etc. And it's quite different on the Monday morning, and it was snowing. It does in Scotland, you know, occasionally. And it was raining. It does all the time. And we went into Drumchapel, and we had a lovely map made out. We'd done it all very scientifically, where we were going to start and all that, and we got lost. We didn't know where we were. And another old brother, Johnny Miller, he said, well, you'd better start where we are, because if we don't start where we are, we would be starting somewhere else. That sounded quite intelligent to me. And I could only agree with that. So we started knocking the doors and giving in tracts. And of course, we knew that we would have difficulties, and I'll tell you about some of the folks that we met. And we did that kind of thing. And, you know, that's not a work that you do a lot of. And, you know, I had a little mat, and you're ticking bits off. And we were hearing how wives can be very encouraging, and they can, because after a day of that, and you see how much you've done, your wife says, is that all you've done? Because it's only a wee bit in the mat. And just as a brother's wife sent them back, so your wife sends you back to do another bit. But you see, we started that, and we discovered that we weren't getting very far with that, we were doing that. And the problem that we faced was, how do you cover a huge urban sprawl? For instance, the housing scheme of Drumchapel, of Easton House, which we work in now, is the largest in Europe. It's the largest housing scheme in Europe. Now, you know what a housing scheme is now, and it's the largest in Europe. And how do you tackle that whole area with a tracking team that's now aged from 80 to 84? You see, now the world would look on. I was telling you the other day, Timothy, what was, well, there, the extra promise, wasn't he, a young man? Let no man despise thy age. That's what I tell them, you see. Misquoting Timothy. I say to these brethren, let no man despise thy age. However, we decided that we would change tack, and we got a card printed. And the card has on it a tear-off postcard and a free post. I don't know if you call it free post over here. You can stick it in the mail. You don't need to put a stamp on it, and it comes back. You get a license from the British Post Office to do that. So we started that, and we started putting these cards through the door, just acting as postmen. And we found out, you see, there's a lot of folk who have a habit of putting a card through the door, who are a bit shy about speaking to somebody in the door. And then the areas where we work, a lot of people, most of them, would be very reluctant to open the door to you, for the simple reason that they're a bit afraid. And if they don't know you, they won't open the door anyway. And even if they do, and there's two of you standing there, and with a nice smile on your face, two men standing in the door, you can frighten old folk when you do that. So we put these cards through, and we've been doing that for a number of years now, and we get good response. The first time we did it in four high-rise blocks, 700 houses, and we'd already knocked all the doors, and nobody was interested in the gospel. Nobody wanted to know us. And we put the little cards in, and we get 9 replies. So that's 9 folk who actually were interested in the gospel, but didn't like to tell us. And we started on that, and we send them back to start with a New Testament and a copy of Ultimate Questions. And we send them gospel literature 3 or 4 times every year. And that one now, we've got a good few hundred folks there who are still on the list to receive. We give them options. You can get a New Testament or a visit or receive gospel literature on a regular basis. And we've a good few hundred who receive gospel literature on a regular basis. And we've contacted some interesting people on the way through. Let me tell you now about Easter House. We moved over to Easter House 18 months ago, and we started there with children's meetings. Now, on the edge of Easter House, there already was a little Sunday school running, and we moved further in. And because the place we were moving to had no testimony, the children knew nothing, absolutely dark as night, they knew nothing at all about the gospel, we decided we would take some of the children up from the other Sunday school to give them a kickstart in singing the choruses. Now, these children, of course, haven't moved very far. You'll understand when I tell you this. They haven't moved very far. We decided that there would be an incentive. We said to them, they could come up to the other children's meeting, and we would give them a hurl and a motor. Do you know what a hurl and a motor is here? You don't know what a hurl and a motor is? A run in an automobile. Is that what you say here? It's a hurl and a motor over there. So we drove into the street, and of course they were all there, and because it was a hurl and a motor, there were folks there we'd never seen. But we put two of them in the back of the car, and one of them was called Wee Joseph. Wee Joseph Doherty, and Wee Joseph was in the back of the car. And he says to me, "Where are we going, Mr. Grant?" I said, "East Hall, it's maybe half a mile." He says, "I've never been to East Hall. Have you been to East Hall?" I said, "I have." He says, "Is it near Israel?" So, well, I couldn't really answer that, but you didn't know whether it was near or Israel or not, but when we drove in, they were refurbishing the houses up there. They do it every 4 years, spend $5 million on them, and the people keep them nice for about 3 hours. And so 4 years they do this. And as we drove in, he saw Alvin Payne, he nudged his pal, and this will interest some of you folks from the States, but he nudged his pal and says, "I tell you, it was like America. Just because there was bright paint." That was his concept. Well, we started the meetings up there, the gospel meetings, a children's meeting, and we use a school and we use a school room. Now, brethren, I'm convinced that a great deal of the gospel work now has to be done out with the gospel hall. Go out to where the people are. Go out to where they are. Because, you see, to invite somebody into a gospel hall would be as strange an experience as me going into a Masonic lodge. Know that I'd go into a Masonic lodge, but I wouldn't know what to do in there, whether to wear an apron or put my shoes on the wrong way around, or what to do. But you see, these folks, they don't know, but a school is neutral territory. And we're able to hire a school room, and we applied to the director of education and all that, and we weren't getting very fast, so we went to the top of the tree. The man right at the top, We call him the janitor. What do you call him here? The custodian or something. We went to the man at the very top, and he gave us permission. And we started, you see, with our gospel work. Now, the very first night we had gospel meetings there, there was a fellow came in, and I asked him his name, and he says, "My name's Brian Fullerton." And I said, "Nice to see you, Mr. Fullerton." He says, "Well, you've been calling me Mrs. Fullerton up to now." Because he had sent back a card, and the card just had B. Fullerton on it, and my wife and I looked at it and we said, "That's a woman's writing." Now, I don't know how you tell, but we decided it was a woman's writing, and here he was, Brian Fullerton, 26 years of age, nice clean cut to a fella, and then he comes, and he sits down, and he listens to the gospel. And after the gospel was over, he came over to me and says, "John," he says, "what do you know about the tent?" Well, I says, "Now, what tent is that, Brian?" Now, Harold Paisley had a tent in Glasgow, and I thought he meant that. I said, "The tent at Bellahouston Park." He says, "No, I don't think it was ever pitched at Bellahouston Park. I don't think so." I said, "What tent are you talking about?" He says, "Are you a preacher and you've never heard about the tent?" I said, "No, I don't know what tent you're talking about." He says, "Moses' tent. Tabernacle." I said, "No, I was never pitched at Bellahouston Park." "You're right enough, Brian. I never pitched at Bellahouston Park." He says, "Do you know about the tent?" I said, "Well, what do you know?" He says, "Well," he said, "you sent me a New Testament, so," he says, I got a Bible. I went and got a Bible, and I started reading at the beginning of Genesis. And he says, "I came to the tent." And I don't know what translation he had, but it was called this translation, the tent. And he says, "I can't get beyond it." He says, "It's great." He says, "I've drawn a picture of it." Well, I made up my mind I was going to get him out of the tent into John 3:16. So I tried, wasn't interested. He came back next week. He says, "Can I speak to you about the tent?" Came back the next week, "Can I speak to you about the tent?" And I said to my wife, "This boy's getting a bit annoying. I mean, who'll ever speak about the tabernacle?" So he said to me one day, he says, "John, would you send me a book about the tent?" Well, I didn't want to send them jukes and the offerings or anything like that. So I sent him the little book, House of Gold. I don't know if you have it over here. Little book, House of Gold. I sent him House of Gold. And a week or two came back, and I was preaching one night on From Eternity to Eternity, and I had a chart. Very simple. And you know, he came over and he says to me, "John," he says, "where's the temple that Nehemiah put a warrant?" You'll not understand that here. Very polite over here. "Where is the temple that Nehemiah built the warrant?" Is that what you say here? Well, I said, "Look, Brian, you come and sit here." I said, "I'm not talking to you about anything like that until you get saved." And he looked at me, and with that Glasgow way, he said, "Uh-uh." I said, "You are?" "Uh-uh," he said. I said, "You never told me." He said, "You never asked me." I said, "How did you get saved?" He says, "You sent me a book." I said, "I did." He says, "About the tent." I said, "I know." He says, "Did you read it?" I said, "I did." He says, "There's a picture in that book. A man stoning outside the tent. And he's got his hands on the top of a beast. And the book says he's transferring his guilt." He says, "When I saw that, I knew that's what I had to do with the Lord." And you know, I learned two lessons about that. I learned this, that folk can get saved from any portion of the Word of God. And I learned this, don't try and change the work that the Holy Spirit's doing. So you see Brian there, that's Brian Fullerton. And these are the kind of folks that we meet. You see, they've never gospel, never had any kind of exposure to gospel truth. Now, we've met other interesting people. What we do is we have a gospel meeting. Now, I want to confess something here. We're a wee bit heretical. We don't sing any hymns. And the reason is the folks don't know any hymns. Now, we're going to have a month's meetings in June, and we hope maybe to get some hymns introduced. But we simply gather them round in a sort of horseshoe shape, and we preach to them for about 20 minutes in the little school room, and then they got a cup of tea, and they can ask any questions and take away any literature that they like. And by that way, we can reach folks who've never heard the gospel before. And I want to tell you, I don't know about over here, but over in the UK, we had an evangelist, Robert Walker, great man. And he used to change the hymn, "Not Far Away in Heathen Darkness Dwelling." And he used to change that "Far, Far Away" to "Not Far Away in Heathen Darkness Dwelling." Brothers and sisters, there are folks living within a stone's throw of us in the UK, and they've never heard the gospel. They've never heard about Christ. They've never heard about salvation. So these are the kind of folks that we meet, and we work in that area. Now, what we do is, we have, for instance, in Easter House, we have a children's meeting every Wednesday night. Now, these children can sing very, very well now, and then we have series of meetings. The whole month of June will be in there, in that particular area, just preaching the gospel in the little school room. Now, let me tell you about one or two. The other folks that we met, they don't all get saved, of course. Some of you know about a man we met. Alec McKenzie knows about this man. We were going up a close one day. I don't know if you have closes here. Closes are entries where there's flats and there's doors off it as you go up. We were going in there one day, and there was a radio playing. Now, there always is a lot of noise, but there was a particular lot of noise. Now, when there's a lot of noise, it's somebody's doing something they shouldn't be doing. And I've learned the significance of that verse: ask no question for conscience sake. You never ask anybody what they're doing. There is a rule, as you meet them in the street, you always say, "Fine day." Even if it's bucketing the rain, you still say, "Fine day." So you see, when in that day, and I passed this gentleman and I said, "Fine day." I didn't ask him what he was doing. I'll tell you what he was doing. He was axing in his front door. He had an axe and he was knocking down his front door. Well, that's normal, isn't it? He'd lost your key. But, So he was axing in his front door, and I passed him, and I said, "Fine day." And he was a polite fellow. He stopped and said, "Fine day." And so we went to the top, and we started working down, you see, with a track. And then when I got down to the floor he was on, he'd made a bit of progress. There was quite a hole in the door. Now, I've learned this with them, that if you don't ask any questions, they give you an explanation. And they always start by saying, "You see." You see, well, there was a lady in the house, and it was a financial dispute. Let's put it that way. He claimed that she had his Baru check. Now, a Baru check, a gyro, is what you get for welfare. The word bureau in Scotland, Baru, you see. So, he explained that. Well, just at that point, now, ladies, you'll be able to understand this. I hope I'm not insulting you as I say this. But the lady in question, her curiosity got so great that she stuck her head out the hole. And she said, "What are you wanting?" And I explained that we were with gospel tracts, etc., and that kind of thing, and, you know, that we were in these gospel tracts. And then I spoke to him, and the head went back in, and the man said, "Thank me," and then he resumed his activities. Now, folk have said to me, she was a brave woman in there. A man coming in with an axe. Can I tell you something? A man with 10 axes was no match for yon. You should have seen it. I've never seen anything more like an elephant in my life. If I'd been in the house with her, I'd have an axe in the door to get out. So you see, you come across all kinds of folks. And these are the kind of folks that you come across. And they've got little interest in the gospel, many of them. And you say, well, what kind of folks have an interest in the gospel? Well, you see, I was glad that Brother spoke about 7 years, was it, the book? 7 years, or the little book somebody had, or whatever. You see, you can give tracts today to somebody, and they have no interest. But you see, something comes into their life, and maybe tomorrow they'll have an interest, or tomorrow they'll have something, you know, just that causes them a little bit of concern. Now, to back up the work, we've commenced, for instance, the production of gospel tapes. Now, a brother said some folk don't like radio work, some folk don't like gospel tapes. I like gospel tapes. I like radio work. And we do a 15-minute gospel tape. Now, the Mormons work around the area we're in. And one of them was a wee bit talkative to me because he didn't know who I was. And I kept my lips zipped until he was finished. Then I told him who I was. Just let him talk on. He was an American.
Elbert Cox, his name was.
And what they were doing was they were going round with videos and giving videos into the houses and saying, look at the video and we'll come back tomorrow and discuss it with you. So they went back tomorrow and they went to the door and they said to the man, any man, we're here to discuss the video that we gave you yesterday. What video? The video we gave, didn't they give us a video yesterday? You see, they'd sold the video by this time. The fact of the matter is that they would sell anything, you know, sell their granny, but nevertheless, what we found was a 15-minute gospel tape was best. You know why? It's no long enough really to tape over. They want a C-45 or a 90 or whatever it is. C-30 is no good for taping over. So we use two sides of it. It's 15 minutes, a wee opening hymn, a wee closing hymn, and an 11-minute gospel address. And so we back that up with a gospel tape. And then to back that up, for those that are newly saved, and for others, although it's expanded beyond that, we have a thing called the tape Bible class. And the tape Bible class consists of one tape a month. We're going through the epistle to the Romans at the moment. We've reached the end of chapter 8. And one tape a month, and it's a C90, 2 45-minute lessons on the epistle to the Romans. And that is just sheer verse-by-verse teaching. It's not watered down for anybody. And that's the kind of thing that we do. Now, I've got to keep an eye on this watch. I've been told I've got permission to go a wee bit over, and I'm going to take advantage of that. Now, let me tell you about some other aspects of this kind of work. This is a you'll have gathered by now that this is a deprived area. And one of the problems that you have in these areas, of course, there are gangs, there's drugs, there's all sorts of alcohol abuse, and all sorts of kind of individuals, you know, who have difficulties and problems, all sorts. We came across a man called John Doherty. Let me tell you about John Doherty. John Doherty, he didn't get a cab, but he wrote to us and he said, other folks have been given cabs to get gospel literature. You haven't done my area yet, can you send me some? And we did, and he started phoning me. And John Doherty turned out to be a man who was brought up as a Roman Catholic, left the Roman Catholic Church when he was 17, and John Doherty became a spiritist and eventually joined the Church of Satan. And for a good number of years, he got literature from the United States sent to him monthly, and it was his job to distribute it in the Glasgow area. And when he first of all met us, John said that he was in a dark depression. And I told him on the telephone that was inevitable. And you see, there he was, and he telephoned back and forward for a while, and then he phoned one night when I was out, and he said to my wife, tell John not to phone me back. He says, I'm going back to the chapel. He says, the priest will have the answer. So we back went to the chapel. We didn't hear from him for a few months. And then the phone went one night again. It was John Doherty. And he says to me, do you remember me? I'm John Doherty. I said, I do, John. What can I do for you? He wanted two things. He wanted, firstly, to get a Bible. He's a very unstable kind of individual. And he wanted, he asked a second question. He wanted to know how to get saved. And his big problem was he thought that somebody had to be with him, a confessor of some kind, had to be with him. Well, you see, after a while he phoned back and told us that he had done what I asked him, that he had put his trust in the Lord Jesus. Now, you see, I wanted to visit him and he wouldn't let me visit him. And I kept saying, I want to visit you, but he wouldn't let me visit him. And then one day he phoned and he says, John, could you visit me? And I said, when? He says, in about 10 minutes. Well, it couldn't be 10 minutes, but when I went to see him, and when I went into the house, you see, there was a big plaque on the wall, dated October 1961, and it was signed by the local parish priest and by a representative of the Bishop of Glasgow, the Roman Catholic Bishop of Glasgow. And on that chart, it certified that as from that date in October 1961, the house and the family and all in it belonged to the Lord. And it was sealed by a big seal. You see? And John said to me, it took me a long time to go over that. You can see the background, can't you? Now, I said to him, John, why can I no come? And it turned out the reason he didn't want, he's a very timid kind of individual. The reason he didn't want me to visit is that his two brothers have a speciality. The speciality is breaking people's legs. And a brother said he was told to get down, but when he said that, I gathered up my stuff for that. Walked him, I didn't know, ran towards the door, really, you know. But however, you see in these areas where the police maybe aren't as effective as they should be, if you've got a problem, you go and see John's brothers, and they fix it for you. For a payment of a few, you know. They might not do anything, they just visit you and make a recommendation. You see? They maybe visit you, make a recommendation that you don't pursue that course of action. And that's John's brothers. And he says, my father's coming back. He runs the business. So I said, what's your father like? He says, a wee fella. He says, he wears a cap and bonnet. And he says, he's got on a builder's jacket, a builder's name in the back. He says, he employed by the builder. No, he says, he got it. He got the jacket from somebody. He says, but he's come back quarter to four, you better hurry up. So I hurried up. And as I was walking down the stair, the wee tartan bonnet came up to meet me. And I was glad I was out the door, I could tell you. He was a wee fella, but you could see the whole background. And these are the kind of folks that we have to deal with. These kind of individuals. You see, we also preach the gospel in the open air. Now, I've heard some good advice about open air preaching here. Some of the brethren believe there are certain rules about open air preaching. They believe it should always be 6:15 on a Sunday night. They believe the fewer people listening, the better. And they believe that if you can quote as many obscure texts that nobody understands, that's a perfect gospel address. Well, we have open ears. And the trick about an open ear, you see, is you're only going to get somebody's attention, perhaps even for half a minute. And you see, what you've got to do is just get the verse into their mind. And then if you're preaching in the open air, quote a lot of scripture. And get the verse. And if you repeat it over and over again, that doesn't matter. Because you're only getting them for a few seconds. And we found one afternoon last summer, we were having open air, and we found that the Mormons were going around. So we had to tell the people through the loudspeaker to ignore these folk. And just ignore these people. They don't have the gospel. They can't get you to heaven, these folk. They're just deceivers, and they're bringing lies to your front door. You've got to be as blunt as that. And then you see, having told them that in a nice way, you can then go in and you can give them the gospel. Now, one or two other things I want to just mention to you. You come across some good folk who really are concerned. We had some children's meetings, and this was the first time in Drumchapel that we'd had children's meetings, and we set everything out. And we got all the material from John Ritchie, so it was all pucker. And we had it all set out, and nobody came. Nobody came. And my heart was in my boots, and I went to the door, and I looked out. Nobody was coming, and I turned to walk back into the hall. And as I was turning to walk back into the hall, I heard a woman shouting, "Are you John Grant?" And I turned around and said, "I am." Well, the woman came advancing towards me with a man behind her. I later got to know her as Jackie, and her husband was called Sean. Now, all the time I'd dealings with him, I never heard Sean say a word. He just did that. I never saw him doing that, but he just did that. So Jackie said to me, "Are you saved?" Glasgow women can be very nice and gracious. She says, "Are you saved?" I said, "Ah." She says, "You wouldn't know it for your literature, would you?" I said, "Why that?" She says, "Well, look at this." She says, "A text in the front, but there's nothing in the back. That's wasted space. You should have a text in the back." I said, "I'm sorry about that, Jackie. I'll consult you the next time, you know. Free design department." However, she says, "Have you got the gift of the Spirit?" I said, "Uh-huh." She says, "Can I see your literature?" "You can." So she went in to see the literature, and then she and Sean had a conference. Jackie's mouth went like that. Sean went like that. And at the end of the conference, she came back over, she says to me, "Your literature looks all right. I'll bring some Waynes." Waynes are children. She brought 24. And by the end of the week, she was bringing 45 in a van. Don't know if it was strictly legal, but I wouldn't bother Jackie. So she had all these children. But you better really know what she said to me. She said to me, after she came back the first night, after the children's meeting, she says, I checked you out. She says, I spoke to my pastor about you folk. Now, brethren, you'll rejoice in what she said. She said, she told me, you gospel hall folk, you're great with the gospel, but hopeless with the tongues. So, but she says, you wouldn't be teaching the Waynes the tongues, would you? I said, no, we wouldn't. Now, there was Jackie, and she offered us a flat. She lives in a close, 8 houses, and you know, 6 of them are empty. There's only her and one, and her mother and another, and her husband. And she said, we prayed them out. They were all unsaved, and we prayed to get rid of them, and they've all gone. It's a Christian close, she says. Now, Jackie offered us her house for gospel meetings. But for obvious reasons, we couldn't avail ourselves of that opportunity. Because she was very, very Pentecostal. But everybody in the street knew her. These are the kind of folks we deal with, and these are the kind of areas that we're in. You see, there is almost in these areas a kind of subculture. And money doesn't come into a lot of it. If you want something, you make the word out in the street that you want something. And somebody will give it to you. You don't ask anything. You'll see folks. I remember a brother, Alec Catchpole, came up to see us, and he was going around one day, and he says, how does this work? And I explained it to him. And just as I explained it to him, 2 ladies, and were on a hill, were pushing a settee up the hill. They were flipping. That's how you do it, Scott. Yeah. Pushing the settee. The gentlemen in the place were being very gentlemen. They were just ignoring them. And these two, and then further down the road, there was a woman pushing a trolley with a fridge in it, a Safeway trolley with a fridge in it, and you ask no questions for conscience sake. And now, you see, what happened was, you then, that person owes you one, or you owe them one, and when you want something, you tell them and they get it. Now let me tell you that one of the first men that we met, I was with Alec McKenzie one day, and we knocked the door, and a man came to the door. He was wearing what we call a Drumchapel simmet. Now, you might not know what a Drumchapel simmet is. It's a garment, an undergarment, that has more holes in it than the manufacturer put in it, and has 3 buttons here, and is made of a kind of cotton material. I don't know where they get them. They don't sell them in the shop. But he says to me, are you the brethren? I said, well, not all of them. He says, I'm saved. Well, I could smell the alcohol. I said, you're saved. He says, I'm saved. He said, I used to go to Harley Street Gospel Hall. Are you interested? Oh, no, I'm interested. He said, would you come in? Well, we went in. Now, round his doors, and right down his hall, there was boxes. And the hall was very narrow because I had to turn sideways to get in. My wife said it didn't make any difference. But I had to turn sideways to get in. And we got into the house, and I said, you're saved. He says, I'm saved. I says, tell me your story. What's your name? George Ross. George Ross. What's your story, George? He says, I was brought up a Catholic. I got saved at a gospel campaign that was being held by, wasn't it by assemblies, but gospel, and he got saved. And because of that, his wife left, took the family. And he says, and I moved up here. Council got me a house up here. And he had a nervous breakdown, but he really had been away from the Lord, badly away from the Lord. There was a chap hanging over him, using threatening behaviour. He had an axe as well. Not everybody in Glasgow's got an axe, by the way. And he was trying to explain to the police that when you go to the dentist, you always carry an axe. I don't quite understand why. But, you see, I got to know George, and I'm back and forward, and one day I went, and he said to me, John, I'm worried about these boxes. I said, why? He says, my son, he'd be back in touch with his son, he said, my son brought them here months ago, and he told me that he would turn up in 2 or 3 days to take them away. I said, well, what's in them? He says, I don't know. So he went and opened one, and it was the Hasselblad cameras. Now, I don't know much about Hasselblad cameras, but I believe they cost £2,000. Now, here was, 100, 200 boxes, big boxes, full of them. He says, what am I going to do? He says, John, could you pray about it? Oh, what do you do praying about that? If anybody's got any hints, tell me. He says, could you pray about it? I said, well, I'll have a go. So I prayed that the Lord would solve the problem of the boxes. And away I went. Now, George had never, he told me he would never go to a meeting. He was finished. Matter of fact, the only two books he had in the house was a revised and an authorized version of the Bible. And he told me, open the scripture, and he says, that's me, cast away. I'm going to heaven and I'm no good for God. Well, my son was preaching at a gospel hall in Glasgow the following Sunday, and George must have seen this in the paper, and George went to the meeting. And he thought it was me. And he said to my son, tell your dad that God answered his prayer. Well, Monday morning, I was up at his door. Well, how did God... He says, my son turned up on Friday and took them away. He says, I did what you asked me. I never asked them where they were going. Now, George, matter of fact, I visit them off and on. I actually visited them maybe a month ago, 3 weeks ago. Just, I was up doing a bit of work in the chapel and went down to see them. Now, here's a typical example. We'd love to get him to the assembly. He's been two or three times tonight's work, and he's going around one or two other places. The important thing is that he start coming back into meetings again. But let me tell you, he's a great lad for helping people. And the folks in his close decided to reward him. And they decided to reward him by painting his house. There's only one problem. They couldn't afford to buy paint. But what they did have lying was old tins with bits and pieces of paint. So they pulled the resources and they poured it all into one tin. The lady who showed me around said it was the most beautiful bright purple she'd ever seen in her life. George said to me, he says, you've never seen inwood like this, have you? I've never seen inwood like this, George. I've never seen inwood like this. Because that's the ceiling, the walls, the wood, the doors, the cooker, the cupboards, inside and out. I tell you, the job was well done. The job was well done. Well, there's George, you see. And I'm going to finish. You could go on the reading, I hope. I'm going to finish. And then strange things happened. We were in a house one day, and the man wanted to speak to us about the gospel. Again, it was Alec and I. And he wanted to speak about the gospel. So he took us into the living room. He said, now, could you be quiet? Don't want the light to hear. So he closed the door. I looked at Alec, and Alec looked at me, but he asked no question about conscience. He closed the door. That was quite a normal thing to do. The problem was, it was a glass door, and there was no glass in it. But you stay canny, you know, you don't ask too many questions, but when you get near the door, you put your foot through it just to see whether you really are seeing right or not. Interested in the gospel. Well, listen, pray about these things, you know, because they do have, I'm going to get around to the light tonight, but we'll leave it too much humour, you see, but leave it alone, you know. Pray for these folks, they don't have the gospel. And they desperately need to find Christ. You know, the country's pouring hundreds of millions, billions of pounds into social programs for them. And that will solve nothing. The only thing that will solve the problem is the power of the gospel. That's the only thing. Social problems won't, programs won't save them. Nothing will have any effect on the gospel. Remember quotes of John Doherty, Brian Doherty, Brian Fullerton. Can I tell you, oh, I bet so. Mrs. Christie. Mrs. Christie is a little lady, and Mrs. Christie comes to every gospel meeting she can come to, and she brings her friend Mrs. Stewart. Remember them in prayer. I had a series of gospel meetings there recently. Mrs. Christie was there. And after every gospel meeting, she says what you don't like to hear. I fairly enjoyed that meeting. You're not supposed to enjoy the meeting. You're not here to enjoy the meeting. Mrs. Christie has been in the Church of Scotland for over 60 years. Her nephew, in Assembly Fellowship in the North of Scotland, said to me, contact my aunt, Mrs. Christie. She lives in Easterhouse. She comes to every gospel meeting. After a series of gospel meetings she had, she and a friend came and said, what finish could you keep going on? Not saved. 80-odd years of age. Her daughter lives in Vancouver. She's given me her daughter's address. And I believe from what she says, her daughter may well be saved. And we're going to contact her daughter if the Lord will. Remember, Mrs. Christie, we'd love to see her saved. We have two sisters. Oh, just let me think. Two sisters who help us. Lovely sisters. And they help us. And they visit, and they go around the place, and they are the women who labour with us in the gospel. Great sisters. They bring Mrs. Christie to everything. And our friend Mrs. Stewart. Remember them. They've sat under the sound of the gospel, not saved, not listening, not responding to the message of the gospel, and saying we enjoy the meeting. We don't want them to enjoy the meeting. We want them to be convicted and to be saved by the grace of God. Brethren and sisters, be up and doing in the gospel. And remember the verse that we have. He that believeth is in man baptized shall be saved. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel. But remember this, the world starts at your front door. Go ye and preach the gospel. Speak of Christ and tell them of the Saviour. Because it won't be soon before we're away, before the Lord comes. And remember Glasgow, a city holy given. Thank you for your time.